As we walk this journey called life, we seek to find those things that bring joy to our existence. We want to embrace love, desire, and passion through healthy human connections. We want and need to discover meaning to the steps we take daily. The challenges of breaking barriers stir up our spirit as we prove our individual importance. The value of life is precious as we assist others to discover their way. The legacy of our being is found in the donations we make in those outside of ourselves. Success in this journey takes focus and commitment to winning. The victory is in not allowing fractured beliefs of the masses to impact the rules we have made work for ourselves. This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection. We come to you 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m., Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and Sunday at 8:30 Eastern Time. We have a platform for your voice to be heard loud and clear and unfiltered. It is time that we speak for ourselves so that others completely understand the direction we want our country to go in. No longer can we sit on the sidelines and allow others to select our direction. It is time for people of color to use the internet to make sure their voices are heard beyond a couple of streets. Our thoughts and needs and desires need to be heard around the world. And Thoughts, Love, and Reflection is that platform that you can be assured that your thoughts and feelings will be respected and heard without challenge. It is time for us to come together and make sure that we're not left behind. This is your host, James T. Deshay, looking forward to have you call in to the show at 657-383-0309. 7 days a week, we want to be heard loud and clear.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1, and it's 24/7, the world's best radio station.
In this day and time, stereotypes are the false descriptions for all of humanity. James T. Deshay is the author of two great poetry books that attempt to describe life from a male perspective. It has been a common belief that men are unable to put into words their deepest feelings and spend most of their time focused on the surface of what life means. Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, and Passion, Desire, and Contemplation take you on a journey that has very few travelers. Mr. Deshay has opened his heart and spirit up in ways that few have ever experienced. The depth of his poetry will have you reading his books and poems over and over again. You will find yourself using his passages to describe your own feelings to your family and friends. It is now time to put aside your thoughts and feelings related to the depth of men's thoughts and delve deeply into the words of James T. Deshaies. Once again, he will put an end to your thoughts that men can't translate their heartfelt spirit into words. Both of these books will allow you to find comfort in the reality of the heart of men. You will spend hours trying to embrace the way men want to love and display their passion to the women they love. Don't be fooled by those books that create love through words of lust, vulgarity, and unhealthy displays of sexual activities. You will discover the types of words that will allow you to rejoice in the future of what love truly means to men. Your book clubs and families will be able to discuss these words without fear. No one will have to leave the room. Both of these books can be purchased at jamestdeshaies2.com and lulu.com. Feel free to reach out to the author at tlreflectionsjtd@gmail.com.
This is James T. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. We're here today because I want to talk about a subject that we've discussed before, but it keeps reappearing because of situations in our country where people are given the death penalty, but then given a stay of execution because of new information. A gentleman who was supposed to be put to death today in Missouri was given a stay of execution by his governor because they received information related to DNA that was on the knife that was left in the victim. The victim was a white female who had been stabbed numerous of times, and the knife stayed in the victim, and the perpetrator, who is now on death row, had merchandise that was received from the home of this victim, but suggested that he received it not by way of the actual crime that took place. So we have the DNA that says it was not him on the knife, knowing that when you stab someone, there's a tendency to leave your sweat and your blood on the knife because you may nick yourself as you are stabbing someone over and over and over again. So if this person's DNA was not on the knife, it leaves us to question, who in the world was it that stabbed this young lady? This took place in August of 1998. She was stabbed 43 times. And cellmate and an old girlfriend were the only ones who gave information related to him saying that he committed this crime. And when we're unsure of a person committing the ultimate penalty, should we be seeking the death penalty in this type of situation? Until we know for sure that this person perpetrated the crime. And I'm not even sure if we know for sure whether or not the state should be involved in giving the death penalty out as a penalty of this type of issue. Tyrone, we're talking about the death penalty and how a number of people have been taken off death row when new evidence is found. So should the state be in the business of killing people when there might be conflicting evidence related to their guilt or innocence?
Good evening. Thank you for inviting me. Once again, I want to say hello to everyone out there in Radio Land. That's a good question. I'm not even certain that the state should be in that kind of business of killing people. But I know, you know, we have the law and families, you know, who want somebody to receive the death penalty. But I don't think that resolves anything, putting a person to death. But what is the question, James? The question is,
the problem is that we've had a number of death penalty cases overturned because of DNA, and because we, in some instances, are not very sure of whether or not these people committed these crimes, should we be giving them the ultimate penalty when we're not sure of whether or not they even did the crime?
There again, I don't know how to answer that question, but I don't even believe in the death penalty. And so, you know, they were found guilty. So, and some states have the death penalty, but I just don't even believe in the death penalty. And there are so many people that's in prison that's innocent. So many. I was looking at something on Facebook the other day. Somebody sent me something, and the gentleman was saying that he was an older man. He's probably about 65, whatever. That the police stopped him, and they had plans to plant drugs on this gentleman, and it was just happened so that one of his friends, his family, a state trooper, was passing by and saw that the sheriff's department had this guy all jacked up, and intervened and found out that they were getting ready to plant drugs on this gentleman. And there are other places here in the United States where the states, cities are known for planting drugs, putting murders on people, in particular black men. And it's just a low down, dirty shame, and I think a whole sheriff department, a police department was busted. I think everybody should have their just due. And so I'm just gonna kinda shut up and listen, because like I said, I really don't believe in the death penalty. You know, I know it's a law in some states.
What are your thoughts about, you know, we have a long history of African-American men not receiving a fair trial in the hands of an all-white jury. And then we have a situation where we're not completely sure if a person committed the crime. And, you know, we've had people just like Tyrone just said, the people who find themselves having evidence planted on them, should the United States as a whole be involved in the death penalty at all? Or should we just rely on the state keeping us safe by keeping people locked up with no parole?
Well, good evening, everybody, again, and thank you, James, for another good topic. I'm kind of like Tyrone on this one. I'm not too much in favor of the death penalty. To your point, though, there have been, throughout history, hundreds, if not thousands, of black men convicted of would-be crimes and without sufficient evidence have been sentenced to death. Thank God for the new process of DNA, which was really implemented during the Atlanta child murders with the case of Wayne Williams and the missing persons of about 27 young black youths. Even in that case, the death penalty was not implemented because of the fact that there was still some uncertainty in that. The fiber evidence used in that case was supposed to be overwhelming, but still, with the missing bodies of 27 persons, and only about 11 or 12 were actually found, and this supposedly had been the person, the death penalty was not implemented. But my true feelings about the death penalty, it should be in the way of special circumstances for me. When it comes down to heinous crimes by persons that have been categorized as being monsters, people like Jeffrey Dahmer that would kill multiple persons and then eat them, persons like John Wayne Gacy that took on a part-time job as a clown and would lure young children into his lair and kill them like that. Even Ted Bundy and people like that. In those cases, special circumstances for me, the death penalty would be sufficient due to the fact it seemed that they would be unable to be rehabilitated for that type of behavior. So that would be my answer to that, James. Thank you.
Well, I have to admit that I've gone back and forth on this, but one of the issues I have is that we are only one of a few civilized countries that still participate in the death penalty, and the death penalty requires us to spend more money and waste more time than any other penalty that we're given or sentence given to anyone. But we have to understand, are we talking about the safety of the community? Are we talking about revenge? It seems to me in most cases when a death penalty is given, it's given because we want to give revenge back to the immediate family. So I'm not sure if we are supposed to be in the business of revenge and that God is the only one should be involved in the death sentence, and we need to just keep people away from the general public until they die. Joyce, what is your thoughts in terms of the death penalty as we continue to see more and more people who are taken off death row after additional information is found out?
That's true. A lot of people are on death row that are innocent. So the only way that I feel that a person should be on death row is that it's without a reasonable doubt, and everyone know that the heinous crime that they committed, that it was got caught in the act, those names that Dee had mentioned deserve every bit of death row. But there are so many innocent men and women that I know I've heard of, and according to a lot of the shows that you see on television, are innocent and they're on death row and have not really have the backing of the true evidence to place them in that situation. So it's debatable. It's very debatable. I have mixed feelings about that. They have death row here, and if I'm not mistaken, the guy that they tried to kill, he wouldn't die. So therefore now it's in the rules, and they're fighting now that they're trying to get away from legal injection because it took him 2 hours to die when he should have been dying in 14 minutes or something like that. It's cruel. But in other countries, I mean, the United States is better than some of the countries because it's according to what the crime is. Your tongue get cut out, your hand get chopped off, your leg or whatever. So, I don't know. It's just, but it has to be some type of sickness where, like Dee said, that there's no rehab, no matter what. There's no way of rehabbing you. So then, therefore, you're not a good to society or to yourself. So, why not?
Well, you know, we have to be honest about that. Seems to be an unfairness to the system, and it has been documented that black men or people of color are more likely to get the death penalty when the victims are white versus when the perpetrator is white and the victim is black. And in most cases around the country, when you're more likely to have an all-white jury who has certain biases, it seems that we're always going to be in a situation where people of color are more than likely going to be given the worst sentences. So we have to really ask ourselves, do we want to participate in a system that is inherently unfair? Tyrone, it has just been shown that, you know, by all statistics, that if a perpetrator happens to be black and the victim is white, that you're more than likely going to get the death sentence, and you're going to more than likely be faced with an all-white jury. So therefore, the system in and of itself is unfair.
That's true. That's true. Well, as we look throughout history, the black man and black woman has been mistreated, misused, abused, we've been put down. We've been everything that's negative has been done to us. But, you know, regardless, irrespective as to what they've done to us, I just believe it's our time. And I'm not certain it will ever stop that, because I tell you, it just upsets me when I think about it and I read about it, when I hear about it, the things that they have done to us. And can you imagine, I was reading the other day where you have a whole community of policemen, judges, district attorney, and everybody else you can name who were just, I mean, they were responsible for falsely accusing black men of murders and drugs. I was reading the other day about Wayne Williams here in Atlanta years ago. I guess I was a child. I don't know what was my age, but I was listening to Dick Gregory the other day, and he was saying that Kathy Hughes with TV One, she was saying that Dick Gregory was a conspiracist. He studied conspiracies. He talked about that gentleman. There's no way that gentleman could have done that. He also talked about Dr. King, who actually killed Dr. King, and a whole bunch of other things. It's overwhelming. It's like it really makes me upset to think about that, how people plant and plot strategies for your demise. And they have done us so bad. Now, I can't even imagine the things that they have done. Look what they've done to Emmett Till for supposedly whistling at a white woman. This thing is real bad. It's real bad, and so many people have been falsely accused. Now, the Bible doesn't say you have a right to kill anybody. Who are you? Who are you to kill somebody? The Bible doesn't give you a pass on killing somebody. It doesn't say that because that person did whatever they could have done. And I know there are certain things that's heinous. There are certain things that are so bad that you just want to take the person out. But I don't know. I don't know, James. This is a good one. This is something that's going to challenge me.
Well, one of the things that is we have to come to grips with is that there are people out there who are willing to falsify evidence in order to get conviction. You have prosecutors who are willing to hide evidence that might exonerate someone because they want a conviction. So we have to be mindful that the law in some instances is just not fair. And so do we want to be giving people the right to condemn somebody to death when a system seems to be flawed? We have to recognize that there are just people out there who are unwilling to be fair And if we cannot get rid of this unfairness that people of color face, then how can we be prepared to give the maximum penalty for situations that might reveal that the person didn't do it? In history, we have men who didn't have anything to do with a rape of a white woman who were hung, who were innocent.
Yes.
And the system today is no different, where you have situations where prosecutors, again, will hide information that does not give them the results that they want. So, Kathy, we're talking today about the death penalty and whether the state should be involved in the death penalty. In Missouri, a governor just gave a man a stay of execution. He was supposed to die today, and his DNA was not found on the knife that was left in the person's body. So that means that he didn't clean the knife because he left the knife in her body. How is it possible that he could have stabbed somebody 43 times and his DNA not be left on the knife, but yet he's being accused of that person's death? So we're asking ourselves, should we be in the business of killing people in America? Are you there, Kathy?
I'm here, and your question is to me is, can you repeat that again?
Should America be in the business of giving people the death penalty when there seems to be so many flaws in our system and there are innocent people being put to death?
Should America... I'm not
okay, Kathy. What I'm asking is, our individual states are handing down the death penalty in cases where they're all white juries, where African Americans or people of color are relying on public defenders and who are not given an equal chance to fight for their innocence. But yet they're going to be receiving the ultimate penalty. And I'm just asking, when we're not really sure of whether or not a man committed a crime, should we be giving them a penalty that we can't take back? Joyce, what do you think about that?
Well,
are you there, Joyce?
Like I indicated, yes. No, it shouldn't be that way because, but what can we do? That's why we got to get our young people and we got people of color. We got to get these young people and people of color in key positions that holds those type of positions so they we can get a fair deal. Because in a lot of states, it's just what you say is manipulated. So in order for things to get justice, you know, you can go through the system and you still won't get to justice if the people are just as crooked as the one who you're supposed to be wanting to get the justice from. So we're in a catch-22 when it comes to that. This is the law, but in order for us to change the law and to make the law more the way that it should be for people of color, we need to get people of color in those key type positions in order to fight for our rights. Because it's hard
Like Audrey has said in the past, the majority, first of all, people of color, and when I use the term people of color, I mean in Hispanics, Indians, all kind of people
right.
who are not European, white European.
When
we are, we're in the minority, and then even in that minority, we try to figure out a way not to serve on juries, we're making the pool even smaller from those of us who sit on these juries. And so if you're going to be always finding yourself in a situation where you're being judged by all white juries and that you don't have an opportunity to have high-priced lawyers, and you're going to always be judged by, the lawyers you're going to have are going to be the ones that are given too many cases, who are not the best lawyers, then you're going to find yourself in a hopeless situation. How can you expect these lawyers that are free to be able to compete on the same level as the lawyers who are high-paid lawyers?
But Jane, that's a tough question. That's a tough question. I think I want to echo a statement that your guest that you had, I think it was Sunday, the young man from New York, and I don't remember his name. He mentioned how black people, people of color, in particular black people, have a tendency, not all, but some, enough, have a tendency to not want to participate in the judicial system when it comes down to be jurors sitting down on a case. I've known people to try to find ways to get out of such a situation. And in that, that's probably one of the reasons that when it comes down to actually having the trial, you may only have one black person on the case, on the jury. When it comes down to the public defender trying to defend a person with a serious crime such as that, that's a mismatch. And some kind of way, there should be some kind of statute where a person that's been charged with a serious crime should receive adequate counseling. A public defender does not have the clout and probably doesn't have the experience to actually go as far as one needs to go, protecting a person from being victimized when it comes down to serious crimes. So that's my answer on that. I hope I made myself clear. Thank you.
Well, I just want to give some additional information to those of you out there. I have a friend of mine who paid for his son to have a lawyer. The lawyer charged more than $50,000 to represent his son. Now, his son was with the person when they originally got in the car, but his son says that he left before anything took place or happened. Now, his son at one point was facing life imprisonment. And after paying this $50,000, this lawyer got him down to 5 years in jail because he was not a part of the actual murder. Now, I'm saying to you, had that gone to a public defender, the outcome might have been a lot different. So are we going to allow a system where people who have money can get a better sentence or get a more favorable account based on their financial situation? Kathy, I'm going to come back to you. I mean, how is it fair that people who can afford to pay these exorbitant sums can get better representation for their family than a public defender, and those who are poor have to rely on a public defender?
James, so you're asking us that, but what do you think about that? Because, I mean, look at what you just said about your friend's son. His dad had money, so he was able to go and get a good, I'm going to say good, not a great attorney, but a good attorney that got him down from life to 5 years. We already know what the public defenders do. We know what they're faced with, and even those that come out and talk say that they're overbooked. They don't have time to research. They don't have the resources to go out and get the information that the person that's being charged is telling them about. I mean, but so how do we? I mean, I know you're asking me how do we fix this? This, like I believe that was Joyce said. I mean, it goes back to who we're putting in office. Who's going to on these panels for jury duty? I mean, it's an individual thing. We can talk on the phone and say what we think and what it should be, but if we're not acting on what's actually supposed to be done, then we're as guilty as the people that don't go out there and vote or go to jury duty. We're just as guilty because we need to be out there assisting as well. So, I mean, a public defender is what it is. I just believe you. If you're in that situation and you don't have the money and you have to get a public defender, you better get on your knees and pray to the good Lord that he help you through that situation, because if not, you're going to be in jail with the rest of the people. I mean, there's so many people incarcerated because for accusation that they didn't even do. You know, some of them are innocent, and they're in there because they didn't have the right people to defend them in the trial. So, I mean, but like you said, what do we do? What do we do? You know, we have these people lined up to defend these people, but what are these people really doing? How can we get to see what terms do they use, you know, to put these people in these positions to be public defenders? How does that work? How does it really work?
Well, let me just say, Kathy, my friend's son just was lucky. His parents are not parents of substance. But I'm going to tell you, they did something that a lot of people wouldn't do. They actually moved in with each other in order to be able to come up with the monthly payment that they needed to make. And sometimes these people weren't married and ended up in the same household, and almost every nickel and dime they could squander together was used to pay this lawyer to keep their son from being in jail for life. And I'm just asking, should we have a system that denies poor people or people who don't have the money to come up with a defense using a public defender who may not even go to see him and just assume that he's guilty and not give him an adequate defense? Regina, what are your thoughts in regards to the disadvantage that people of poor economics have when it comes to our system and how they don't have the money for all the DNA tests or the private detectives or all the other ways that people have to try to get off when they find themselves in the midst of the legal system? Are you there, Regina?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. Good evening. I agree with being at a disadvantage and having to pray that you get a public defender who's going to really be a defender of the public. I had a situation where I needed to have a public defender, and we were very blessed in that our public defender gave us good advice, and we came out on top. Needless to say, our public defender was very good and did not continue practicing in that manner and went into private practice. But we did win, and we followed our defender's advice to the T. But that's a rarity. That's a rarity. And people sit in jail, and they sit in jail, and they sit in jail, and never know who their attorney is. As a matter of fact, we had a chance to, we needed a public defender twice, and both times were good. Extreme rare cases.
Well, you know that they call them public pretenders in the jails because it's not often that people get off. So, you know, these guys are friends with these other lawyers, and they go and make deals and pressure their clients into these deals because it'll get them favor down the road. And so, you know, we have to be honest about what's going on in our system and why our people are put at a greater risk in terms of these kind of accounts. Tyrone, what is your thoughts? I mean, you know, I know that I would do all that I could, and I'm nowhere near rich, if my daughter or somebody I love found themselves at the mercy of our system, I would not put it in the hand of a public defender.
Yeah, that's God knows, I wouldn't ever want that situation. But I remember my son got in trouble, and he was not living with me. So by the time I got to him, they had already assigned him a public service defendant, and I just had a heart to heart, eye to eye, come to Jesus kind of talk with him. I also gave him some extra money and told him how important that was. And so he had already, you know, because my son had, he had already, I mean, it was like a month or so he had been working with him. So anyway, we won the case. We got out the whatever some kind of trouble my son had gotten into. But it's a sad situation. I often think about there was a African American district attorney in Dallas who he got probably into 100 men and been in jail for years, was wrongly accused, falsely accused, and had been convicted. He got, I think, between 50 and 100 of them exonerated. It's a sad situation. That's why it's really important to have money. You know, it's some people say they don't want a lot of money. Some people say, you know, money is not that important. Well, money is very, very, very important. You need money. You need lots of it in this society. It's because you never know what's going to happen. You never know when you're going to get that phone call your child is in trouble, or even you. For example, this guy the other day who was on the road, this older gentleman on the road, and police pulled him over. And they were getting ready to set him up. And, you know, he was thinking about what am I going to do? I don't have any money. How will I get out of jail? He was working for a company. How would I get out of jail? Will my company be able to get me out of jail? And so there has been so many things done wrong. And people, I don't know what percentage of people, but you got a lot of people in your jailhouses that have been falsely accused, and they've railroaded these people. And if you don't have the money, because money talks when you're talking about down in that the courthouse and whatever else. But I do know that we can use Jesus as our attorney. He's our extraordinary strategist. If that's what you need, plenty. You know, it's just You know, a lot of people are in jail because they didn't have the money. They didn't have the family to support them. And most families are not going to come together, like, especially in our community. We're not going to come together like talking about, you know, a family don't have that much money. They're going to pool their little resources together, little nickels and dimes. In most cases, that's not going to happen. So these young men and women, they stay in jail. And sometimes they have to a plea bargain. They didn't do it. They have to plea bargain because are you going to sell them for 25 or are you going to take 3 years? You don't have any money, so what are you going to do? It's a sad situation. We still have to get back to putting our young people, putting our folks into those judgeship positions. You know, to enhance and get better for our community.
And I have to be honest with you guys. I have to tell you that I've been in positions where I've talked to young men who were going up to court for serious violations, and they say to them, okay, look, we'll give you 10 years on a plea bargain for 10 years, and you're 18, 19 years old, and you'll be out before you're 30. But if you take it to trial, you're going to get 20 years. And so, you know, and I sit there and I say to them, can you afford to fight this knowing what your situation is and your involvement and your close proximity of what took place? And so you have to ask yourself, now here I am at 57, and I've always done what I thought was right, and I would say I can't afford to be in jail 1 year, so I'm going to fight tooth and nails because 10 is not going to be any different than 20 for me because I'm going to lose everything. But in some of these cases, like Tyrone said, people are accepting plea bargains not because they're guilty, but a fear that if they be found guilty, that they're going to get a maximum sentence. And that is sad that you have people accepting something for something they did not do. Joyce? Are you there, Joyce? Dee, what is your thought about us encouraging young people to take these plea bargains just because they're too afraid to go to trial?
Well, you know, our young people and the older people alike, we have to start paying attention to history so we can better enlighten our young people about their behavior so they won't find themselves in these situations. Now, when we're talking about public defenders and how adequate or inadequate they are to represent, able to represent a person with a serious crime, going back to the Wayne Williams case, he had a public defender. And she tried to defend him with her limited experience that she had. But had Wayne Williams had a lawyer like Johnny Cochran, the outcome may have been different. Because to Tyrone's credit, like he just mentioned, and this is something that we got to remember, and we got to pass these on to these young people who have a tendency to live carelessly. Johnny Cochran said that the color of justice is green. So if you don't have the money, don't do the crime. Because the likelihood is that you won't be able to get off. And going back to the Wayne Williams case, his public defender lawyer was a prime example of who you don't want to defend you if you have a serious crime. Wayne Williams, the perpetrator in the Atlanta child murders, he weighed about 130 pounds soaking wet. Five of the victims was grown men, and they was well over 200 pounds. And so things like that should have been brought into question to a very, very strong degree. And it might have made a difference in the outcome of that particular trial. Thank you.
And we have to recognize that there are people who are being tried every day and who are being put in positions where they just don't have an adequate defense. And some people have people who, like their parents, who will go on trial and say, okay, my son was here at the time that this took place. But you know that the prosecutor is going to say, well, that's your mother. What else would she say? Well, what if she was being honest? You know what I'm saying? Here, instead of them being able to prove that the person wasn't where he was, they dismiss the honesty of the witnesses. And so sometimes we have to ask ourselves, why is it that the witnesses are being questioned for their honesty, but we're not having the prosecutor prove that they were somewhere where they say they were? Christina?
Yes?
You know, how is it that they can dismiss the people we bring up as witnesses and carry on and have convictions but don't have proof that people were where they say they were?
Well, as one of our panelists just stated, the color of what is green, the color of justice is green, the color of
justice.
Law is green, and if someone is paying them to go a different way than the way that they need to go, if they lack integrity, then that's just what they're going to do. And if you're on the other side, then you hope that the public defender is a person who lacks integrity and can be swayed. Just as I think it was Tyrone said, you know, when he got to his son, he already had a public defender, but because he gave him additional money, defended him better. And that's just it.
Well, one of the things we have to recognize is that we have to fight to put ourselves in a better position. We can't always be seen as the victim of the system. We need to fight to the point that we get the same rights as others. You know, you have white, you know, just like O.J. Simpson got off what people say was a weird case, you got to understand that there was a white man in Louisiana, if I'm not mistaken. He was in Louisiana, he was in the South, who pleaded self-defense for killing his neighbor. And he said he was scared after he killed his neighbor in self-defense, and he cut him up in pieces. Now, that man was found not guilty. Now, how in the world could you be found not guilty when you cut your neighbor up and put him in plastic bags and throw him in the ocean? And the reason you said you did that was because you were afraid. Ask yourself if a poor black man or a poor white man could give that kind of defense.
He can be rich. He don't have to be poor, James. He can be a rich black man. He wouldn't get off on that one.
But you understand what I'm saying, D? They can come up with some of the ridiculous reasons. You had a boy, a teenage boy in Texas, I think it was, who mowed down people while he was drunk. And he got probation when he killed three or four people, injured four or five others. and got probation because they said he didn't know how he had been given so much privilege that he wasn't aware that he needed to deny himself a certain thing. Come on, guys. I mean, why? How in the world can that be fair that we live in a nation that can overlook what rich and white people do and be willing to condemn African Americans or people of color at every turn?
James, can I respond to that, please?
Please, go ahead.
Okay. You know, over a year ago, we had talked about how the double standard is alive and well. But what I want to interject right there at this point right here, you know, we're going through a time now where the white nationalists and the Ku Klux Klan seems to be gaining some momentum. Now, when you ask that question, how is that fair? That prompts me to turn back the page of time, and bring into conversation this idea that they had when they tried to turn all white people against black people. And the tool that they used to do that was back in 1925. They had a movie called The Birth of a Nation. And if y'all have not seen that, you got to go on YouTube just to familiarize yourself on how they did this way of indoctrination all for about three generations. This movie was a silent movie, but it depicted black people as being animals, rapists, and robbers. And this movie was very popular for years, a box office hit. And so they used that to depict how they wanted us to be seen. All right, and the name of it again is The Birth of a Nation. All right, now that the Klansmen and the white supremacists have gained ground again, we got to only realize that movie or a revised version of that has been brought to the forefront again. So, you know, Tyrone has asked the question, why do they hate us so bad? What did we ever do to them? And the question is, and the answer is nothing. Nothing. The fact that we have to coexist with them is the problem for them. That's the problem. They don't want us to coexist with them. So that's why when it comes down to these petty crimes, even mediocre crime and serious crimes, we get the book thrown at us because of indoctrination such as The Birth of a Nation. Y'all go check it out. It's really something serious. Thank you.
Andre, how can we ever get to the point where we can just believe in a system when we see such falsehoods in the representation of the rules? I mean, how can we ever feel like we're getting a fair deal when we see people out there willing to plant drugs on people, willing to hide information to keep people from being set free? How can we be so willing to give them the benefit of the doubt?
Well, terrific Tuesday to everyone. I think the best source would be, you know, being reminded that we walk by faith and not by sight. And what we see, we have to know, we have to believe, that's where hope come in. You know, President Obama ran on hope. And the fact of us believing that it's something bigger and greater for us. However, we just don't sit back and watch. You know, scripture tells us to watch, yes, but as well as pray. So we pray and we watch and we act. And that means that we have to understand what we're faced against. We have to understand their game, their strategy. And then the best thing that you can do is always, you know, surprise your opponent and behave in a manner in which, you know, would benefit yourself. So So the quick answer is, again, we just have to believe and trust and know that the Lord is in control. And in the meantime, we do what all we can to keep moving forward. Don't become distracted. Keep your eye on the goal, on the prize, as they would say, and act accordingly.
And we have to be willing to fight in every different fashion that is available to us and defend those who are fighting for us. I have to tell you, there is a black female who won the state attorney's office a vote here, and she came out and just said that she would not ask for the death penalty and in any case. And as soon as she made that statement, the governor came and took the majority of the death penalty cases away from her. And so these are the kinds of people, if we think the system is flawed, that we need to support. And we need to continue to vote her in despite her stance, because she is saying the system is flawed and that the majority of the death sentences are given to people of color, and that she thought it was unfair. And because she took that stance, the governor wanted to kick her out of office, which he had just been elected by the people.
Is it possible I can say something?
Okay, go ahead.
I think that I understand that how can I put this? I understand that all white people are racist, but all do benefit from the privilege of racism, you know, and white supremacy. I understand all black people are not racist, but all do benefit from black supremacy. What I'm trying to say is I don't think we should blame slavery for the sole purpose of our problems, the American aid system, or the prison industrial complex, or the Jim Crow educational system. When I think it's not these things that is hindering us, but it's a lack of our own ignorance as well that's hindering us. I think we should stop looking for validations up from other races and start looking for validation within ourselves, because I think other races are looking for us to validate, you know, what a race is. And us, for us, basically, when I say us, I mean us as black people, define what things are to us. I think the main thing is we can't agree. Everyone came up with a solution and all these different solutions, but I don't think, you know, I don't think we can unify and agree on one solution, one thing, you know, without giving validation to another race. So I just wanted to say that.
All right, and I understand your point is we definitely need to show more love and appreciation for our own race and not expect for validation from others. But what we do want is our systems to be fair. The court system is supposed to be blind, and if there's nowhere else we need it to be blind, it is when we're being asked to give up our freedom that we want to make sure that there's fairness in our legal system. And so if there's no other system that we can ask for fairness, it has to be in the legal system. Kathy, what are your thoughts about what you heard this young man say?
I would agree with this young man and also what Audrey said. I put them two together, and that would be my opinion concerning that question. He's right on. Audrey is right on as well.
Okay, Dee, what do you think about what the young man's statement?
Well, I'm in total agreement that somewhere in all of this, especially in the conversations that we're having, and hopefully that other communities, other black communities and other communities of color are trying to figure out a strategy how we can come together, even across the line of black people with Mexican people and any other persons of color, and stop looking for them, the white people per se, for validation. You know, the young man from New York again, and I don't remember his name, Jane, but he was on your show Sunday, and you have him like once a month. He spoke about social engineering. Social engineering, where this is a plan to where they trying to plot us against one another. And they've been doing it for a long, 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 long time. And it seems like it's working. But we got to put the brakes on that. First of all, we got to come to realize what it is and that it does exist. And we got to be smart enough to put the brakes on it and try to strategize a plan to where we can come out of this plight and get back on the track and start going where we was supposed to have been going when Dr. King was alive. Thank you.
Can I say something?
Well, what I heard the young man say when we talk about, I think what he was saying was not all white people are racist, but the fact that the racism over the years have benefited them and is so deeply into so many of the institutions that we all are having to use, that we find ourselves as African Americans or people of color find ourselves in situations where we are being abused by these institutions. And so when white individuals find themselves in similar situations or similar legal matters, they're given the benefit of the doubt. And that is the case. That's what we want to fight against, is there should be fairness in all aspects of our government so that people of color aren't seen as second-class citizens. Joyce, are you still there? Well, Tyrone, what are your thoughts about what this young man said?
Well, I was just sitting here thinking, there's just no justice. There's no justice. It's just us. When you go down to those courthouses and when you look into what's going on in the prisons, you know, we make up in many cases 60, 70, 80% of the prisons. And it's just, there's just no justice. He made a statement about all white people, and you did too, all white people are not racist. And that may be so. Some of them may not be prejudiced, but they're taking advantage. They're taking advantage of the privileges. There are privileges that comes with being white. Also, this all goes back to our money. It all goes back to our money and the way we use our money. Because those people have no respect for us, but when we learn to use our money, then we will be able to garner the respect that we need. There again, I say, if you give 95% of your money to other races or nationalities, let's say you give all your money, 95% of your money to white folks, then how can you expect to even have the kind of power that they have or even come close? And I use the example, if we both make a dollar a week and you give 95 cents of your dollar to white folks and everybody else, and you got 5 cents left, and they got $1.95. And the next week, you do the same thing. Then we never have any power. But I truly believe that things are coming around. I see it in Atlanta, and I'm really proud to say that. I see things I've never seen before, how black people work together. I don't say they're perfect, but I see how they work together, how they pool their resources together, how it makes them proud to be able to spend money with black businesses. And there again, we have to come together with our money. Our money is our power. We already are the most talented people in the world. But our money speaks volume. When we get when we get control of our money, and you know, we can run other nationalities out of our community. Other different nationalities, they don't have to be in our community. We can run them out. It's a conscious thing. It's once we become conscious. And we have to educate each other about the effects of how you use your money.
even with the court system. If we had money, we could put more and more judges, and more, we have more and more lawyers representing us because they have representation. We're the ones, we just don't have representation. And it's a sad situation when a young person or older person is in jail and they cannot get the proper representation. And I think somebody was saying that they should have that. That should be a due process. That should, they should have some kind of way have a proper representation. But these lawyers, these, what kind of lawyers you call them? What kind of lawyers you call them?
Public defender.
They're just, what do you call them? Public what? But anyway, they're just
pretenders.
In training.
Public pretenders.
Public pretenders. They're just in training. They're just in training. In fact, my son got in trouble. I was sharing with you all. By the time I got to him, he had already gotten a public defender. He didn't even want me to know what was going on. I just happened to receive a phone call about somebody else who had heard that my son was in some trouble. So by the time I got to him, he had already had a public defender. But I gave this public defender some money, which I wasn't supposed to. He wasn't supposed to accept. But I worked him. I worked him. I told him what we're going to have to do to win this case. I worked him. But there again, it comes back to our money. What are we going to do with our money? Are we going to continue to just give all our money away? We have enough money to be considered the 10th largest, country in the world. It all goes back to our money and getting some of these people out. But a change is coming. And you see it. We all see it. A change is coming. White folks and anybody else, they're being exposed. You see, God doesn't sleep, nor does he slumber. Everything you do, he sees it. And whatever you do, you're going to pay for it. You may not pay for it today, but you certainly going to pay for it tomorrow. And so I'm starting to see, even like when the district attorney in Dallas, when he got over 50, I don't know whether it's 100 people, but 50 or 100 people exonerated. I mean, people have been in the system in jail for a long time for something they hadn't done. And now he exonerated between 50 and 100 people. I don't know whether it was in 2 years or 4 years. But do you know they didn't vote him back in? They did not vote him back in. I mean, all his good deeds, he still didn't get voted back in. But like I said, God doesn't sleep. He sees and he knows everything. And I really see a change. I see things are changing. And people are being exposed.
Well, it definitely goes back to economics. And we need to recognize that we have to fight against those systems that don't allow us the fairness that we deserve. David, would you like to get in on this conversation where economics seems to be a major player in the way we treat it in the justice system?
I came in late on the conversation, James. I need to hear a little bit more about the context of the topic, then I could chime in.
Okay, well, what we're discussing right now is how people of color find themselves on death row, and that there are certainly times when evidence is found that exonerates them or put their conviction in doubt. But yet, because we are always at the mercy of the public defender, and we're not being allowed to go out there and have investigators or have the money to have the DNA tested, that we always find ourselves on the short end of the stick when it comes to justice truly being blind. And how do we correct this system that has been so long in not in favor of us as a group of people?
There is definitely systemic problems, obviously, with the injustice of inequality. And I think I like what the young man said when he talked about public pretenders. You know, as he said that, I thought about a long time ago, I used to go to barber school for them to cut my hair, and they were learning. I used to go to the college for dentists, and they would practice and do certain things with my teeth because I didn't have the money to get my teeth worked on properly. So if you just equate it, it's the exact same thing. If someone we love gets in trouble and there's not enough money for a proper defense, then we're going to be, like the young man said, we're going to have the lawyer defending our person that we care about, and he is in school learning at the expense of our victim, if you will. And so we have to, it all starts with money, and if we don't make proper choices, we are going to continue to be victims. Now, I'm not saying money is the great equalizer in terms of there won't be any injustice, but at least we could pay for a proper defense.
And that's what's so important. A lot of times, you know, when the state has the police and they have investigators who are out there combing the streets for information, and you don't have anybody where you can pay them $100 an hour to go out there and find somebody who saw you at the right place, who can make a statement that, yeah, I saw this person at this time, so that they couldn't have done that. You know, so it's a bad situation where money, in some instances, is dictating the kind of legal justice that you're receiving. We all know that O.J. Simpson got the very best, and so therefore he found himself able to overcome some of the obstacles. But that is not true for the many young people who find themselves in trouble, and a lot of times they are taking plea deals so as not to go to jail for the long term. You know, and I've opted today on this show not to do commercials because there's so much to talk about, and it's so important that we recognize and we talk about how we are being victimized in the one area that is so important to get it right. Andre, it is so important to get it right when it comes to the criminal system because we don't want African-Americans to be violating laws and then not be held accountable. But we also don't want innocent African-Americans being given a lot of time when they didn't do something. Are you there, Andre?
Yes, that's true. Yes, I'm here. And yes, that's true. And as I was listening to the other conversation and people sharing their insight and input and recommendations, you know, the young man triggered me to think, what is it that we can do to show unity? And then Mr. Tillis, of course, was saying the importance of us financially determining where we spend our funds. But, you know, the one thing that we can do is to ensure that we ourselves vote, family members vote, friends vote, our acquaintances vote. And, you know, just kind of go in lock sync. That's the unity piece, and that can be a form of unity across the country. And it's not enough to wait to election day or the election time period. We have to start communicating now and making sure that what we're voting on is something that's going to impact us positively, such that we as a whole will benefit from it. So I always try to use your show, James, to identify actions because, you know, words is good and it's so great to have our voices heard, but we have to take it to that next step. I just believe that actions are just powerful. So I would encourage us as a form to start this uniting process is that we make a commitment and ask ourselves, what is it that we are doing? Not what we can do, but what are we doing to help to make sure that people that are important to us get out and vote? Because when we do start making elections results favor what's beneficial to us then we will have an opportunity to make sure that our finances are also united in supporting, you know, strengths within our community. It'll also make sure that we are well represented in the legal society. It'll also ensure that we have the proper medical needs available. It'll also ensure that we have the education that's necessary for our next generation. It'll also give us that pride and dignity that we do as a race support each other. And like the gentleman said, don't wait to others to justify who we are. That's a challenge that we have, and that's one that that's another action item for me to take away. Again, James, every time it seems like I'm taking action items away to do every time I'm listening, but this one is one that will be well worth it.
And we do not have the option to listen to stories that bring hardship into lives. I know that Tyrone sent me the story about the 18-wheeler truck driver who had been stopped for 3 or 4 hours while white sheriffs tried to plant drugs in his truck. And only because a black highway patrol came by and called them to question on the activity that they were doing was he allowed to leave. And he was literally at the mercy of this bad sheriff and one that had been fired from another department for falsifying records. And you would ask yourself, why would another agency hire a man who had been fired for falsifying records at another agency? And he was prepared to hide drugs on this arbitrary black truck driver. He didn't know him by name. He didn't know his family. He was just willing, no matter who he was, only because of his color, to put him in jail under these false pretenses. David, and you know, it's, and until we're willing to pull the cover off these kind of activities, they're going to continue to happen.
Not only that, James, but, you know, in a situation like that where the sheriff was caught dirty, they should go back to all of his arrests and question those as well. But another point that I wanted to make was that, you know, when, let's say, someone we care about gets into trouble unjustly and we need to raise some funds, you know, I've had people contact me, relatives, et cetera, that when someone in their family died, they would just open up a GoFundMe page. Well, we could probably use a GoFundMe page to set up funding for proper defense when a situation like that comes around. So that's just another action item or something else that we could put in our tool belt that we could utilize in the event there's a situation like that that arises. And it's unfortunate, but we do have to have tools in our tool belt because there is so much injustice against our people. So we got to prepare properly, just like we have the talk with our young, our kids. We got to have tools in our tool belt if situations like this arise.
Yeah, Tyrone, you know, that's a good thing. I'm glad you brought that up. It would be amazing if there was a way that we could reach out beyond ourselves and create a movement where we could put together enough funds to take on special cases where we thought people had been wrongly convicted. You know, we do have this group that goes around taking on these cases, but in most cases, the organization is white, and they selectively decide who they're going to defend. And they have had a lot of corrections done. But maybe as a society, we need to step up and find a way to fund our own resources to help people that we know have been wrongly convicted. Tyrone?
Yeah, I agree with you. One of the things I've said, and I've been saying this, I used to publish a magazine back in 1987 through 1994, One of the things I said, and this is not something that has to happen, but there are some of us, in particular athletes, people like movie stars and things, you know, they owe the community. They owe the community to give back to the community. If we started a fund where if you earn a certain amount of money, let's say you earn $100,000 a year, well, maybe more than that. Maybe say if you earn $500,000 a year, that you should be able to give back to this to the black community who educated you, who protected you and everything else. You should be able to give back 10% of your income. And I know for some people, 10% is a lot, but it doesn't matter. You are in a position because of the community. So if you gave back 10% of what you actually earned and put that into a fund, and we begin to pool our resources together, we can have a fund for people who are incarcerated, who are wrongly incarcerated, and there we would have lots of money to be able to not only just do that, but we could buy real estate houses. We can sell to low-income people or find a way to put them in those houses. We can take that money to support people in politics or people who are trying to get in certain seats or offices. There's so much that we can do. Because I'm working with Def Jam's records right now. And I share with you guys that one of the guys, they were on the phone bragging about he had dropped $40,000 the night before. He made it rain, which he may have thought he made it rain, but it didn't rain. What kind of rain he talk about? He's just being foolish. $40,000 in one night, just having fun, drinking and drugging and whatever else. But there's so much that we can do. That's how you come up with a thing called mutual funds. That's many, many people, everybody getting together and putting their little nickels and dimes together, and there you come up with the purchasing power of the wealthy man. And at that point, you hire professional money managers who can go out and buy stocks at a low price and sell it at a higher price, make a profit. We all split it up. We can come together with mutual funds to own large sums, large parts of this world, not just in the United States, but all over the world. There's so many things that we can do if we could ever come together with money. And I know the problem is that we have been enslaved. We have been, you know, we have been duped. We have been trained a certain way. We don't love each other. We don't even like, many of us don't even like. But I think that some kind of way, and I think these young people are going to come up with that, some kind of way, because I've been preaching about this since 1987, some kind of way we have to come together with our money. And we will be so surprised. We will be shocked. How many people have had businesses? I was reading about a guy out of Baltimore, Maryland.
Tyrone, let me just stop you right there because I want to give Andre the final word. I went through this show without doing a break, but I can't do that very often. But, Andre, you have the last minute and 30 seconds. What are your thoughts in terms of the fund that we may be able to put together and maybe talk about that would be helpful to help people?
Well, I'm not the expert with the funding, but I am very mindful of the power of prayer and understand that. But let me just remind the listeners that are here and those who may listen later, we are blessed, we are favored, we are loved, we are powerful, we are smart, and we are destined as a royal priesthood family. So let us just mount up and do all that we are capable of. Let us make sure that we are reminded that we can and will make a difference. Let us not be distracted by evilness or wrongdoing, but let us continue to walk with faith of believing and knowing that God's good plan will come to life. Amen?
Amen. Amen.
Amen. All right, guys, we'll see you tomorrow.
Amen.
I can't promise we'll do this very often, but I went through a whole show without any break. But I just felt like we needed to talk, and it was important that we fully use all the time available for us on this particular subject. I'll see you guys tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Thoughts, Love, and Reflection as we talk about the things that impact our lives now and in the future. Take care, everybody.
This is too deep. I gotta change the station so I